This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 6th of October, 2022. Markets, interesting session yesterday because we, of course, had the big short squeeze rally, whatever you want to call it, the prior 2 days. Part of it on this whole maybe pivot narrative that we've sort of come back from the brink in the UK gilt market, et cetera. So we got a strong ISM services number yesterday, the one for September. After the weak manufacturing side, we saw the more dominant, of course, services sector in the U.S. much stronger than expected, at least according to where the market was leaning. It was only slightly stronger than expectations, arguably 56.7, very marginally down from the August number 56.9, and a bit above the expectations for 56. But let's, you know, make no mistake, 56.7 is a very strong number. A couple other positive data points within that survey were the employment sub-index coming up to 53+. Prices paid was still very, very positive at over 60, et cetera. So great data point. We saw U.S. Yields responding accordingly. So we saw a decent bump, especially the 10-year yields heading back. I think it was above 375 at one point yesterday on the 10-year yield. And markets were duly spooked on this idea that higher yields means lower stocks. But then equities came back. So I thought that was an interesting show, at least tactically, of resilience, Peter, that we saw equities able to come back. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be a different question if we were pushing up all the way to 4% again on the 10-year. But yeah, I don't know how to treat yesterday's session, but just interesting one.
Very interesting, because the rally of the past, the previous two trading sessions were driven by the pivoteers, as you called them in your tweet the other day, the ones that are betting that, you know, the Fed would pivot on their monetary policy because of this Krugman opinion piece and Mankiw buying into it. And you had the RBA and all that. So that was a rally. You had yields coming down. But then yesterday, you had that big plunge. Yields were very high. They remained high. We closed at 375. You got the ISM. And as you indicated, that was not really the number that the pivoteers were looking for, but then we rallied. So how do you?
The narrative just didn't square.
So no, it doesn't really square, right?
Something else is afoot, clearly. Maybe some buying programs because it's a new quarter. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. I, you know, one theory or one hypothesis you could put out there for why equities are responding as it is, it may be, you know, lifting the probability that we probably won't get as bad a Q3 as I might have indicated when the services sector is still as strong as it is. That could be the case, that you don't get that. That was a very negative earnings surprise. I'll just quickly point to the interesting fact, and we have highlighted a couple of times, but I think yesterday's session was very evident. Look at the theme basket performance, slide 2. Green transformation, which are the companies that use green energy, and then the renewable energy, those are the ones that are producing renewable energy sources, and you have the energy storage, this energy. Those three themes were the worst performers yesterday. There's definitely something cooking up, and I don't know whether that has any relationship to the OPEC or whatever, but it's something I need to investigate at least, because this is really screaming at you. Yeah. That something is afoot here in the green industry, if you will.
Yeah, we don't have any chart here at oil, but we discussed it yesterday a little bit, and I think technically it's very interesting, the rebound in oil. Potentially a bottom in that market, at least for now, for this part of the cycle. But we can't emphasize enough. I mean, there are a lot of moving parts here geopolitically, the whole deglobalization theme of the U.S. and China. We have Ukraine getting some pretty obvious momentum on the battlefield. What is that going to mean for the whole situation with Russia, especially for the vulnerability of Europe in terms of those energy imports? And then this move by essentially Saudi Arabia and others in within OPEC, but, you know, led by Saudi Arabia to do a 2 million barrel per day cut. I mean, this is just a massive change in behavior relative to what we've seen in the past. And it just these tectonic plates are moving a lot. And, we can talk about the fallout we want, but I think it's just a remarkable move. And it's going to be very interesting to see the U.S. response.
Yeah, and I think actually that if you want to read some good commentaries on what happened yesterday, read Javier Blasas. He's the chief commodity editor for Bloomberg. He had a very good piece on what conclusions to draw from this. And also, I think John Ossus as well, an opinion piece writer for Bloomberg, is out with some good commentaries this morning on what this really means. I think that will sum it up better than you and I can do right now.
Yeah,
but
sure.
it, but 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 I do agree, John, we are living in very, very interesting times. And the signal yesterday from Saudi Arabia and the OPEC Plus meeting is further confirmation, I think, that deglobalization, realignment geopolitically is the biggest theme that it will be with us for many years to come.
Right. Agree with that. Let's look at, we had an internal investment meeting and discussion this morning with the team. And one of the interesting sort of themes we discussed here, I thought was worth highlighting in today's slide deck. And that is, we're looking at whether it is time to get more exposure into the bond market, certainly for the shorter end of the yield curve in places like the US, where the 2-year yield is actually now offering you decent yield relative to the risk and relative to where inflation might even settle in the coming year or two. And just that, and then on the investment grade corporate bond side, we have a couple of charts here on slide 3. So I put up that LQD, which is an ETF of the iShares, or is the iShares investment grade corporate bond ETF. And you can see, I mean, it's very scary to look at a chart like this, but you have to remember, this is not like an equity chart. This is, these bonds were trading at getting close to 0%. Back during the pandemic. And now they are also offering a yield similar to what we're seeing elsewhere, at least in the US. 3.9% is the indicated yield. So while it has been marked down 20% year to date because of this rise in yields, are we really going to see a further rise in yields from here? And you are getting compensated on the dividend side. In the case of an ETF, it's a dividend. These bullets are being paid out in the form of. I just think it's a more interesting value proposition at these levels. And that was a conclusion. It wasn't just my conclusion, it was more the conclusion of the team that this is the case and just how this works for perspective. So on the right, you have that 2-year U.S. Treasury yield at 4.15% currently. And what does this look like in terms of the value of, it's actually slightly more than 2-year, but a T-note that expires in February of 2015 with a coupon of 1.5%. 25. So slightly over 2 years. What does it look like in terms of the P&L? So you've seen quite a drawdown from 100, close to par, down to currently 93. Well, this is going to pay par in February of 2025 when that renews. So you're getting all of that benefit, plus you're getting the 1.5% coupons until then. So your only loss will be if the inflation level is in real purchasing value terms, if the inflation level is even higher. And of course, that is a material risk, but which is the value proposition here is something far different. And as well, I don't think, as we saw with the gilt market, I don't think the U.S. Treasury can absorb or accept the scale of volatility we saw in a market like that. If that were ever to materialize, you'd quickly see an official intervention. So you have that whole intervention at your back in the Treasury market if you're investing at least on the Treasury side of things. All right, Peter, looks like you popped in a slide here. This is the JOLTS survey. So we did see a big miss there, or at least that was one of the recent surveys we saw. It was a big miss. We discussed that a bit yesterday. But no. What are you showing here on slide 4?
No, it's just that I came across apparently that Powell has indicated in conversations that one of the labor market indicators they're looking at the Fed is where you take the job openings, the total figure, and then you scale it, you divide it by the number, the raw number of people that are unemployed in the US. You get a sense of how many job openings there are relative to people that actually want a job. And that gives you an idea of the tightness in the labor market. I just wanted to put it in here to perspective because I've talked a lot about the wage dynamics being the key risk to earnings. It's the number one risk that everyone in the corporate sector is talking about. Everyone is just freaking out over these wage pressure. And I think this John really well illustrates how big that pressure is, because I think that's reflected in a chart like this.
Far beyond anything we saw historically, exactly. And even in very low unemployment rates prior to the pandemic, although it is coming down. So from a sort of rate of change perspective, it does appear to be easing off slightly. A couple of interesting data points, of course, in coming days, though. We have the weekly claims number today and the jobs report tomorrow. We'll talk more about that in a second. On FX, so we saw it with that interesting session yesterday we mentioned. We saw those yields higher. We saw risk sentiment stumbling and then coming back. And it was interesting to see the dollar was tracking more the risk sentiment side of things rather than the treasury yields side of things. We've seen the opposite regime and what the dollar was tracking previously. So that was somewhat interesting. To say the least, but we need to really see the jobs report tomorrow from the U.S. and see euro dollar trading above and sticking above parity, I think, to close the week to get a sense that we're at least in a tactical setback area for the U.S. dollar here. And there's some a bit more wood to chop in some of the other pairs. In terms of sterling, it weakened again yesterday because Prime Minister Truss seems to be sticking with her guns. I'm a bit surprised here. Tactically, at least, it's surprisingly strong. There's nothing's been solved here. This elimination of that tax cut for the highest earners was one of the least impactful things that the government was trying to do there with its new program, or with Kuerteng's new tax cut regime. So, you know, the maths still don't add up for the longer term, but at least they're trying to make the noise in the right direction in some ways. I don't think it's there yet for sterling. And then the other thing I want to mention here, and just to draw your attention to, is first of all, we have China still off the map this week because they're out of office on holiday all week, at least the mainland markets. So interesting to see where the renminbi picks up next week. But just look at dollar yen, and it's been quite remarkable how stuck we are in a very narrow range. Obviously, the market not wanting to challenge the Bank of Japan and Ministry of Finance above 145, but we saw quite a setback in yields, quite a strong bond market, and that really failed to see any significant dollar yen sell-off. I find it creepy. I find it spooky. I'm just wondering what's happening next year, and if we're going to challenge higher again once the market feels it can do so. Might require the dollar to be stronger elsewhere, but keep an eye on that. If that just continues to trade in this sort of pinned low volatility fashion, despite considerable market moves elsewhere, I don't think it fits well with the idea things are going to remain calm in dollar yen. Okay, let's. You've got a not a very long laundry list of stocks to watch today, Peter. You've put Shell here on slide 6. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I went with quality instead of quantity today, so had my shoulders there. Yeah, so Shell CEO is out saying that the Q3 will be much weaker compared to the second quarter. They are seeing lower profitability in the refinery, in its refining and chemicals business. So I said recently that one of the reasons why I think the earnings season will surprise to the downside is that this cost of living crisis is really curbing consumption. So a lot of the consumer stocks are really being pressured. Commodity prices are still somewhat high, so the cost pressure increasingly from wages will dent, I think, operating margins. And then the third factor that I've mentioned is that I don't think the energy sector will continue to deliver the strong earnings into the aggregate numbers as they have done so before. So I think this is just an indication of that, or indication that will happen. Yeah, and then if we talk earnings, slide 7. So we were on slide 6 before, by the way, sorry for that. We have not a bunch of very interesting companies, to say at least. We'll fire up the earnings season next week, and I'll put in the upcoming earnings for next week in tomorrow's update. But for now, today, focus us on the Conagra Brands. I'll put in a little snippet because, I mean, it's packaged foods. So you can see it's all sorts of different frozen air. You can get a lasagna. You can just heat up in your oven, etc. It's probably, so again, we talked about it yesterday with one of the other companies, that there are a lot of substitution effects going on among consumers because of the hit to disposable income. And I'm just wondering whether there is an upside surprise to a company like Conagra Brands, because they are selling very easy food, and maybe at low cost, because these can be mass manufactured, and people might pick this over fresh groceries.
Or more, maybe I would suspect this looks like a lot of pre-prepared foods.
Yes, exactly.
So over restaurant meals, where you pay multiples of what you would pay, even for a nicer box of frozen, what is this, double meat whatever, or keto this or mega that.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's within the frozen brands, you get the store brand cheap stuff, or you get maybe the Conagra fancier stuff, or you go to the restaurant. I guess that's the whole chain of cost,
yeah,
in terms of what you're looking at. Yeah, so let's see how that turns out. And there's a whole laundry list of things on slide 8, but I think it's a little bit interesting to note the number of Fed speakers that are voters, two of them on the Board of Governors, Waller and Cook. They're out speaking late, very late today. Mester as well, she's a voter this year, out speaking very late. So I don't think we're going to expect any new tune from the Fed, but we need to look out when there's so many of them lined up speaking. Again, on the U.S. labor market, we have the latest claims data. The last one last week was one of the lowest in the U.S.'s economic history, except for a handful of readings this spring, which were which set new records, population adjusted. So there's that, and then obviously tomorrow's non-farm payrolls change. The ADP private payrolls change data yesterday reasonably strong with the revision of plus 50 or so to the prior month, making it look like at least that things are humming along. And then the average hourly earnings, a key point, as Peter pointed out, on wages, though it's expected to show the lowest rate of growth year on year since, I believe it was December of last year, only expected at 5.0%. So a hot month-on-month number there and year-on-year number on top of that would be an interesting challenge to that expectation. You can see the list there on slide 8. We also have added the G20 meeting to the longer-term calendar highlights. So we need to realize that. Speaking of geopolitics, we alluded to earlier. All right, that's an interesting session yesterday. Let's see how things sort out today. But I think the really interesting thing to watch for the rest of the week will be how the market reacts to whatever this jobs report tomorrow delivers and how we close the week ahead of a big earnings season that is set to kick off in style next week and with mounting pressure the weeks after that. That's it for today. Stay careful out there, and we'll be back tomorrow with a Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.